Welcome to the Today's Leader podcast. Building tomorrow's best leaders, today.
Way to go, guys. Way to go. Keep it going. Good job, guys. All right, Paul, I see you.
Finish up. Let's go.
My pleasure to welcome to the Today's Leader podcast, Building Tomorrow's Best Leaders Today. Please welcome Jen Georgette and Corey Blake from Roundtable Companies. How are you both this afternoon?
We're wonderful. Thank you so much for having us.
Doing great. Thank you.
My pleasure. Let's kick off. I'm intrigued by your company, the Roundtable Companies, which is a storytelling company. Let's start with the history or the journey of that particular your company. Why does it exist? Let's hear a little bit.
Sure. Well, we've been around since 2006 is when we were incorporated. Initially, created it to help people to write the book that they're born to write. Didn't realize that's exactly what I was creating, but I had come from Los Angeles in the film and television and commercial industries. I was an on-camera actor, and when I was getting married, I was looking to get something that was a little bit more stable at the same time that I was wanting to be less of a creative tool in other people's crayon boxes, so to speak. And so I kicked off the company as a very practical organization to support people in business who had something creative they wanted to say and creatives who really didn't necessarily know how to talk to business people. And so we kicked off the company, and because of my background in LA, we got asked to help with books very quickly. And personally, I became very addicted to that process, especially when we had books that were going out and really impacting lives. And so we built the company to support those individuals. And then eventually, of course, as you can imagine, when people have a really profound experience writing their book, they don't want to leave and just move on with their life. So they started asking us, what else can you do to support us? And so we ended up building a whole slate of services that then led most recently to this idea of, okay, how do we, instead of doing the heavy lifting of turning people's stories into art, how do we support them by creating a space where we guide them so they can create a work of art out of their own story?
Yeah, sounds awesome. Sounds excellent. So many leaders get told to embrace the concept of storytelling within how they lead and influence and impact in their teams. Yet so many struggle with that concept because, you know, a story may be a personal story. They're not quite sure what they should share or, you know, the extent to which they share. So help me understand for the listeners how storytelling can really help a leader create impact within their teams.
Great question. I think one of the things that comes up a lot is that story is very intimately interwoven with vulnerability, right? If we're sharing a piece of ourselves, we are sharing our own humanity with other people. And I think we've been conditioned as a society to enter into a workplace in a very compartmentalized way.
Yeah.
We leave our, you know, our spouse side, our parent side, all of that at the door, and then we come into work and are expected to just be employees, be team members. And I think more and more leaders are inviting a more integrated side of their team members into the workplace and asking their whole selves to show up. Because if you consider how much time we spend with our colleagues, it's an immense amount of time. And getting to know each other from a very human perspective allows us to tackle some really big challenges that come up in the workplace, right? It allows us to tackle things like inclusivity and diversity, because that comes from a heart place and not from a head place, right? But we have to know each other's stories and what we're bringing to the table in order to do that. And that starts with leaders who are willing to share their own stories.
I heard a collective chill down the spine of our listeners when you mentioned that word vulnerability. So, because there are some leaders that really struggle with that concept. What the process in your workshops, how do you embrace that? How do you help a leader understand the concept of vulnerability and then to embrace it as part of their leadership skill set.
Yeah, I'll jump in on this one. So as part of the book writing process, because we help people write the book they're born to write, which is different than an informational product, we realized very early on that every interaction we had with a client had to build trust,
yeah.
Right? Because every interaction is going to deplete trust or it's going to enhance trust. And so we recognized we needed to enhance it at every step as much as possible so that eventually they could start saying things to us that they'd never said to their spouse or to themselves, right? And when they start getting that out of their bodies and hearing them say it, hearing themselves for the first time, there's some significant transformation that happens for people. So we learned through that process how important and imperative vulnerability was to transformation and to growth. And so we started pulling it into anything that we were doing, including, you know, when I would go out on stage and just talk to audiences, I would practice vulnerability from the stage and create an experience where I am inviting the audience to judge me for things that I'm sharing. So I would share from the stage that I stole from my first employer, and that gets a certain kind of reaction. And I would walk them through exactly how I took thousands of dollars from this multi-billion dollar corporation as a 16-year-old kid, and how I thought that I felt terrible about it until I had shared it probably the 20th time on stage and had the momentary realization of, uh-oh, I think I don't feel bad about this. I think I feel pretty proud about this. Like, what does that make me, right? And when I would share that, like, right, the expectation in our brains is that the audience would judge me and look over to the event planners and be like, why is this guy on stage, right? But the reality was people leaned in, and the story that I received in terms of responses was people trusted me more because I gave them something they could have judged, but then they didn't. So when we're talking about leaders and vulnerability, we have a belief, our brains make sense of vulnerability as a weakness, as something that's going to be held against us.
Yeah.
But if we can create situations where people can actually practice vulnerability, they will see and witness, oh no, this creates connection. People lean in, they don't lean away. Mm. We won't believe that unless we see it with our own eyes. Yeah. So we need to, in our work, we help leaders to create those moments where they have that profound experience of, oh my gosh, people love me more for having shared this thing I was terrified to say out loud. And then they can go back to their teams and lead by example with them. And that can create a really significant shift within a culture.
Excellent. That certainly makes sense. And I guess, like many things, that first step is always going to be the hardest of a leader sharing that initial vulnerability. Now, you talked about connection and how it connects leaders into their teams or the people they lead. The component of trust, that to me, I believe everything that's great in our life is built from a foundation of trust. You know, your relationships, your family, the work that you do, the clients that you have. There's a deep element of trust for anything that is actually really great, amazing in your life. So help me understand storytelling, the impact storytelling can have with a leader that wants to build deep trust within his team or within their team.
Well, I think any place of trust comes with psychological safety.
Yeah.
Right? This has to be the foundation of any place that you're trying to build trust in. Once that is created, then that container of psychological safety can hold our stories with grace and with humanity. And we function off three rules or three agreements, if you will, to create psychological safety. So presence is one of them. Non-judgment is another one, and resisting the desire to fix one another and to fix the problem, which is really hard for humans to do. It's really hard to not jump in and to rescue each other when things are happening. And through that psychological safety, it makes it so much easier. For instance, if Corey and I are having an argument about something or disagreeing, I can go to him and say, this is upsetting me because the story I'm telling myself around this situation is this.
Yeah.
And then I can approach it from a place of real honesty and vulnerability without it becoming something that disputes between the two of us.
Mm.
I'm not rejecting him as a person. I am merely sharing the story that I'm creating in my head.
Yeah.
That's contributing to the situation.
Yeah.
And allowing space for him to include his part of the story as well.
Mm. I like so many things that you just talked about, that about propensity of people to try and fix each other. And fundamentally, they'll often neglect everything that needs to be fixed within themselves while they try and fix everyone else. And
sure.
And but being vulnerable and having those conversations that you just described takes an immense amount of courage, or a framework that's going to help people build that courage. Those types of conversations just don't happen, do they? It's not a natural thing for someone to come up to someone and say, hey, I'm not sure about the story I'm telling myself in relation to that discussion we just had. It's not, you don't see that on the street. You don't see that with shopkeepers.
Right.
Yeah, you know. So so talk me through the process or the framework. And I know you mentioned the three steps in that psychological safety. But to me, there's a courage thing that's got to be instilled in people. They've got to believe that that's the way forward, and they've got to have the courage to take that forward. How does that particular process play out?
Well, there is. I appreciate you bringing up the word courage, because, you know, Jan and I are armed with many tools to be able to have these kinds of conversations, and it's still hard, right? Mm-hmm. It just is, particularly when we care about what we're trying to do together and about each other, right? I think it's very helpful for anyone to recognize that these feelings that arise in us that require courage, they typically are manifesting because we have something that we care about, right? There's a commitment that we've made to each other that's heightened, that's important, that creates these extra feelings.
Yeah.
That's a great sign, right? But when it comes to actually having the courage to step forward, the agreements that Jen mentioned are a helpful structure.
Mm.
What we want to, you know, whenever we're going to lean into courage and step into a difficult conversation, we want to increase our odds for success, because if it doesn't go well, the scar tissue, it can be brutal, and it can take us a long time to try again, right? So we want to help set up the possibility for success. And that first agreement that Jen mentioned around presence is such a brilliant one to set the stage and to create the possibility for success. And I'll just give you a quick example. Yeah. So if I'm coming up to you and saying, I have something that's hard for me to share, I'd like to do it at a time when you can be as close to 100% present with me as you can be. Is now a good time for that, or would there be a better time? Right now, we create a moment where you understand there's a seriousness to this, as opposed to me just coming up to you and dumping the problem on you, right?
Yeah.
Or the challenge, in which case, let's say you've got a sick child at home, or a parent in the hospital, or something that's, you know, something really imperative that has your attention, and I dump this on you, and suddenly you go, oh, excuse me, I have a call coming in. What's the story that's going to go on in my head?
Mm.
It's that I don't matter, and that my challenge is irrelevant to you, and that you're a jerk, and like, oh, our brains go to horrible places, right? So in this case, though, if I've actually set this up in a way where I request your presence, then you can come back to me and say, this is a terrible time, but I do want to be present.
Yeah.
How's 10 o'clock tomorrow, right? And now when we actually sit down and I muster this courage and share what I'm going to share, there's a far better chance that we're going to have, right, a sincere conversation about it, where there's a more likelihood that we'll walk away with some positive result. The setup is huge.
Yeah.
Typically, we just dump things on each other and we don't consider the setup, or we assume that people will recognize how important things are and that we should be prioritized right now. But life is big and there's lots of things going on in the world that need our attention.
Mm-hmm.
So the request simply for presence sets the stage. It doesn't entirely answer your question of courage. I think there is an aspect I'll just share around practicing courage, right? So We talk about like vulnerability is a muscle that we can exercise and get stronger at. And so one of the ways that we do that is we take the safest person in our ecosystem and share something vulnerable with that person, mm-hmm. right? And as soon as we get through that and survive, then we can do more reps, right? Yeah. By sharing something of equal vulnerability with someone a little bit less safe. Or we can increase the weight, so to speak, by sharing something that's harder to share, but with the same, you know, level of safety person. There's different ways we can practice, but courage, I think, is manifested by through the attempt and the survival, right, of getting through it. So we want to start small. If we start too big, and we don't succeed, the pain is intense and may prevent us from trying again.
I like the concept of practice. I will often talk about the need for leaders to prepare for what's in front of them. And often we don't know what's in front of us. So whether it's establishing resilience within what it is that we do or emotional intelligence, skill sets, it's all about that practice. It's all about, you know, those tough conversations to be able to sit back and prepare and map it out in your mind. And all of these things help leaders prepare. So I really like that concept. Now, your organization's been described as the intersection of storytelling, leadership, art, and community. And I'm fascinated by that because once again, leaders are not going to see themselves as, some leaders, I should say, I shouldn't put them all into a basket. Some leaders are probably going to say art. You know, I don't necessarily want to play in that sort of a space because they'll see that as something that's frivolous or potentially. So walk me through how you've come to work with some really big names in what it is that you do. So what sort of benefit do those organizations get around doing a storytelling roundtable course in pursuit of their business endeavors?
Ooh, that's a great question. That's a really great question. So prior to these classes that we've been offering, we spent a lot of time creating books, like doing memoirs with a lot of these CEOs. And I think what's really fascinating and inspiring about a lot of the people that we've worked with is they are sharing a piece of themselves that created this business.
Yeah.
Right. So instead of just saying like, here's five steps to becoming an entrepreneur, you're sharing like, here's the childhood obstacles that I went through and the things I became passionate about that led me to this place and to create this business that means so much to me. Because that business doesn't just belong to you anymore. Mm. That business belongs to a whole ecosystem of people that are helping to create it with you.
Yeah.
And it's that word belonging that helps motivate people and drive people, and everyone row the boat in the same direction, right? So when companies come to us and they bring their teams through our storytelling courses, not only are you getting the opportunity to witness each other's personal story that led them to where they are, but now you get to collectively be a part of your bigger story.
Yeah. I can imagine how inspiring that would be, working with, you know, your leadership, your executive team, working through something like what you've just described, and how connected and bonded and trusted that you all feel because you've been able to walk through your storytelling process. You know, one of the very simple questions when I'm working with teams is often I'll start with a very simple exercise. I want you to tell the person beside you or tell the group something about your childhood that made an impact. And I'm constantly amazed that since a simple question can lead to so many deep answers. And sometimes it gets a bit skilled in facilitating to try and summarize it and wrap it up and make it safe and all those sorts of things as well. But it really is an amazing question. And you'll see some people just share something that's really quite shallow because they're not in that space. And then you'll have other people that will share something quite deep. When we, so where am I going with this? So that's a really good question, Tony. Where am I going with it? And that's
where are any of us going, Tony? Where are any of us going?
This is where I'm going. Does everyone, so I know part of your message is about heroic stories and transforming individual lives. So does everyone have the capacity to share, or does everyone have a heroic story for starters, and do they have the capacity to share that?
Yes and yes.
Yes.
Truly. And I think we are, I'll speak for myself, I am continually astounded that that is constantly proven as true.
Yeah.
Because I worry about it every time. Like, is this the time it's just not going to work? But that hasn't happened, right, okay, in 16 years. but I think there's a really fun way to illustrate that. The reason that we created our courses was because prior to the pandemic, we had a sales organization that had about 300 agents on the phones that were taking incoming calls and gathering data and then selling a product back to the caller. Okay. And they had the idea of, what if instead of collecting data, we collected their stories? And that's a very different request for their salespeople, particularly if they were going to take those stories and put them in a book that they wanted people to read every page of and have an emotional experience with. Mm. So I came in to start training them to figure out, is this even possible? And then it started to, we had some success with it. We had plenty of resistance too, because, you know, salespeople have a winning formula and they don't want people to mess with it. But we were playing, we got them into a vulnerable space. A bunch of them took some risks and saw that it was starting to pay off. Well, pandemic hits, and we had to figure out how do we continue. I couldn't travel. I was traveling across the country to do this. Couldn't travel anymore. So what do we do?
Yeah.
Well, we ended up creating this online course. And the idea was, if we can prove to each individual person that they have a heroic story, and then we can prove to them that everyone in their class has a heroic story, that maybe they will accept and take the leap to believe every single person they're on the phone with has a heroic story. And it worked, Tony. Wow. It, like, blew our minds, and they would share these stories that terrified them to share. But then the healing that happened and the bonding that happened between them was so massive. And in combination, their business measurements were just off the charts. Mm. They've collected over 1 million stories, this company, now.
Wow.
So huge numbers that they've put out. But what we're so moved by is what they tell us in terms of the impact of going through this course. It has been, I listen to my spouse differently. My kids want to talk to me now because I listen differently and I ask them different kinds of questions now. Like, so the personal impact and the number of people who've gotten promoted because they're more confident. I mean, all this stuff is just bonkers to us.
Yeah.
And it all comes down to we helped them put together and unearth the heroic story that they didn't know was there. Yeah. And it takes, like, some finesse, and there's a lot of guidance that they don't know where we're going until we get them there. That's an important part of it, because you can't think your way into this stuff, because it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But we can get them there. And when they share that heroic story and watch the whole room go, holy smokes, I've known you for 10 years and I had no clue how beautiful a person you were. That's a profound moment for a team to go through together.
It is, absolutely. And in a world where the stories we tell ourselves are fundamentally being described and pushed into us by the narrative of whatever we're reading, watching, social media, flicking through, I think that's something powerful for people to be able to embrace. Instead of telling a story about, you know, the injustices of the world or whatever it may be, that we're actually looking inside and saying, hey, I'm a bit of a hero here, and I've got resilience, and I've showed success, and I've been able to overcome obstacles. I think that's a beautiful thing that you're doing, and an incredible thing for leaders to embrace. So been awesome speaking about that. So now I'm going to move into a couple of your individual stories and ask you some questions. So we'll start with Jen. So who's been an inspiration for you in your journey so far?
Oh gosh. I've been blessed to have a lot of really, really great leaders. Corey, of course, being one of them, who's my great mentor right now. But when I was in my 20s, I worked for the National Gallery of Canada. And one of my chiefs while I was there, his name is Alain, I remember him always coming to talk to us on the other side of his desk. If any of us needed to go and have a conversation with him about it, he would always get up from his seat and pull a chair around to the other side of the desk and sit across from us. Mm. And it seems like a small thing as I say it, but I remember how deeply impactful it was for him to just make that small adjustment. And it really resonated with me that I'm here with you. Mm. And it was the first time that I really, really identified leadership as a privilege, as something that we get to do to lead other people. And ever since working with him, and I'm still in touch with him now, and we still keep in touch whenever we can, that has always stayed with me, that we're a team together. It's not from the top down. I'm sitting across from you and we're doing this together.
And that's a great story of how little things can truly make a difference. So many leaders need that barrier between the people that they're talking with. They need that desk there. So it gives them the power equation, and just that simple, fundamentally a simple act of moving out and sitting with someone is just powerful. What about you, Corey? Who's inspired you in your journey?
Well, I will volley back to Jen. She teaches me things constantly, and I really adore learning from her, because we see the world differently, and she adds a lot of value to my life. I've been influenced since the beginning of our company by someone I never got to meet, is a gentleman named Harold Klurman, who started the Group Theater in New York in the 1930s that eventually became Broadway and then Hollywood as we know it. And I've watched all of his any videos that I could find and read all the books that I could find on him. He was a director and a producer, and they called him a generator. He brought creative people together to say something important to the world. Mm. And he has a quote that I just adore, and I do paraphrase it, but it's that the truth is like castor oil. It's bitter and hard to swallow, and people don't want it. So we open their mouths with entertainment, and then we pour it in. I've loved that quote so much, and it speaks truly to the philosophy that we believe in, even when we're talking about these hero stories.
Man.
Like, we're helping those stories be told in a way that feels artistic so that other people around have an open heart to receive, right, what's being poured in. It's a really powerful mechanism, and so many people deliver information without any consideration for the delivery method, right? And so we're marrying art with education and information, and that way it can be digested far more deeply.
Excellent. That's an awesome quote. I'm gonna look that up and share that today, because that's a great quote. I love it. So
you too.
Jen, tell me about your relationship that you have with failure. As we know, this thing called life is never a straight runway to success. It's we have our ups, we have our downs, we climb the peaks, and then we plummet into the troughs. So share a little bit about your relationship with that concept called failure.
Oh, goodness. It is a work in progress. That's what that relationship is. As I am gently trying to learn how to, as Brené Brown would say, veer away from being a perfectionist and being a good enoughist. And failure was really, really, really hard for me when I was younger, because I took it as not just failing at a task, but I was failing as a person. And that was just really, really challenging for me. And now I'm learning how to engage with failure. I don't even like the word, to be honest. I'm learning to engage with it as feedback. Yeah. What worked and what didn't, and how can we try again? And I'm learning to embrace it as something that helps guide in different directions. And I say that as though it's an easy thing, and it's really not an easy thing. But I think probably what failing has taught me the most is just allowing myself to feel whatever it is I need to feel about something first. Yeah. And then move through it. So it's okay to be sad and disappointed when something doesn't work out. Yeah. But it's through the act of letting yourself hold space for those feelings that you can pick up the pieces and and move forward a little bit quicker.
Yeah, failure is feedback. I like that. What about you, Corey? Your relationship with failure?
I'll say failure is a companion, a constant companion, not a friend. I don't feel friendly towards failure, but I have accepted that failure is a companion, right? So I'm somebody. My intuitive nature is I like to go for grand slams, and that means that I strike out, you know, fair amount. It's just inherent to the process. Sometimes I talk about it like, you know, jumping out of a plane without a parachute, kind of a personality, and sometimes that means you slam into the ground at a very rapid speed, and you can break everything in your body and have to recover. So I've certainly been there. I love the part of me that believes in the grand slam and fights for the grand slam, and I love how much I care about what I am trying to be successful at building at any given time. And there's far more, you know, as Harold would say, the flop is the norm, you know, the success is to be celebrated for a reason. So the failure is more likely. So it makes it that much more important that we companion well with it.
Which is challenging to do when you're hitting the ground at velocity.
So hard. Says not my friend, but we tolerate each other.
Excellent. What about the vision? Share the vision for what you and the continued impact that you want to have with your organization.
Ooh, go for it, Jen.
Oh my gosh, how do you even begin to answer that? Our vision, and we have it written down, is that we want 1 million students to go through our transformative storytelling experience. And we want 1 million people to own their story and to embrace their story and to really uncover the heroic nature of their story. We want the world to be full of heroes.
Excellent. 1 million students. That's a huge goal. And I wish you every success in attaining that. So if someone's listening today and says, I need what these two people have got, so how can they make connection with you?
They can find us at roundtablecompanies.com. That's companies with an IES. They can find us on Facebook under that. They can find us on Instagram, on Twitter. Jen has her own thriving community. Jen, do you want to share a little bit of your info?
Yeah, you can find me on Facebook at Genevieve V. Jolje. And we are hanging out there all the time, getting vulnerable, getting real, and building all kinds of community. So you can find us there anytime.
Excellent. And they should find us on Clubhouse too. If any of your listeners are on Clubhouse, we host Vulnerability is Sexy Game Nights every Tuesday night in the US, which would be morning by you guys. But what a good time, man. I mean, we create a psychologically safe place for people to pop in and share some stories and feel deeply connected to each other. It's lovely.
That popped up on my Twitter feed just the other day. So I thought, what a great name. Vulnerability is Sexy. So I absolutely love that. Hey, Corey and Jen, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today, and thank you so much for investing in today's leaders.
Thank you, Coach.
So lovely, Tony. We appreciate it.
If you're looking to build better leadership skills, check out the Today's Leader website at todaysleader.com.au. We really are driving a leadership revolution to build tomorrow's best leaders today. Today's Leader is a collective, the mindset to make a difference, the ability to create an impact. Think and Grow Business hosts our Today's Leader Mastermind, Think and Grow Business, where we focus on personal, professional, and business growth. Book your free 30-minute discovery call right from the homepage at thinkandgrowbusiness.com.au. Don't forget, wherever you are standing stronger, braver, and wiser. Don't forget the golden rule. Don't be an arsehole. I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now. We'll